M&K Talk YA now presents Lady Smoke Part 1 of the Ash Princess Trilogy by Laura Sebastian. Back to M&K Talk YA.
I'm Marissa Snyder.
And I'm Kitty Bradford.
And this is our young adult fiction podcast. And this week, we started the second book in the Ash Princess Trilogy by Laura Sebastian. This book was called Lady Smoke, and we read up to the chapter entitled Picnic.
Wait, we did?
Mm-hmm.
I thought we read up to the chapter entitled Practice, so I read one extra chapter. I apologize.
Oh! Shoot, I think you were right. I think I was supposed to read one more chapter.
Okay, well,
darn it.
At most, I will spoil 5 pages for you, but hopefully I'll try and stop when we get to pick.
We have to talk about, okay, does anything bad happen?
Okay, so where did we stop?
Okay, so we ended, the book opens 2 days after the events of Ash Princess, so
yes.
We don't lose much time, and it just opens on Dragonsbane's ship, which is called Smoke.
Yep.
And I was totally wrong about why this book is named Lady Smoke. I thought it was going to be mainly about Dragonsbane and tie into the ship's name, but we learn the origin of the title of the book, which I like whenever there's like a clear tie to the title of a book and something in the events that happen. So it's actually based off of Theo's old maid, who we meet up with again, Hoya. She says that she reminds her of this bird that is kind of like a phoenix. It has a different name, though. Firin, the Firin Firebird.
I didn't even remember it had a different name. In my mind, it was just a phoenix.
A phoenix, yeah.
This is how bad I am with names, yes.
The bird molts into smoke and is then reborn in flame. And so she said she thought of Theo as a phoenix because she, you know, was an ash princess and now she's rising from the ashes, so to speak.
And how, I feel like she mentioned too how long it can be sometimes before they rise, mm-hmm. which I thought fit in so nicely with that analogy of her like kind of waiting 10 years before she sort of found the strength and means to fight back. But I just love, and we talked about this before, but how much these side characters are getting backstories and like getting fleshed out and becoming three-dimensional. Like I love her mm-hmm. story and that she's Eric mother and that she had relations with the king
mm-hmm.
and that she, even though her mouth was sewn shut, like did care for, I love it. I love all these side pieces.
I've actually really enjoyed this first half of this book. It doesn't feel like a middle book to me so far. I don't know if you agree, but I think it's opened up the world quite a bit because mm-hmm. like, the whole premise right now of this book is they need troops now, right? They need soldiers and an army to help them fight against the Kaiser now. So the plan is Theo's going to offer her hand in marriage to the head of a country, some country, in exchange for their support.
And I love that tradition is that the queen does not get married. So not
yes.
only is there's like all these extra layers of what she should do as queen, because she's really doing it to help the country, like you said, to get troops and stuff. It's not like a romantic thing or anything like that.
Right.
But at the same time, it's kind of going against the country a little bit because traditionally the queens have just been queens with no married partner.
With no kings.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that they're just allowed to take lovers. And it totally makes sense too, because they discuss this a little bit later in the book about like, well, if there's a king and, you know, making sure that you secure an heir is so important. Like, there's no doubt if a queen has a baby,
yeah.
it's her kid, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, questions of parentage and, you know, the father's side of things can be a lot more murky.
And I also, there's two things I want to say about that. One, but there is the question of the twins, which I was not expecting to come back the way it did necessarily, but there's a rumor that the twins got mixed up when they were very, very young and the queen picked which one had been the firstborn, but that there's potentially a chance for Dragonsbane and or Art to make a claim to the throne at some point because of that. And then
that made sense to me.
It did. I just wasn't expecting it for some reason. I guess I was expecting her to make a claim for the throne, but I wasn't thinking about the whole, like, she might have actually been the firstborn. Like, they could have legitimately just been mixed up.
Switched, yeah.
Yeah.
Because this whole thing at the beginning, Dragonsbane is, like, so harsh with Theo, and she, it's kind of, like, treating her like a child and is using every opportunity to undermine her. And at first I was just like, why are you doing this? Like, you're not helping this cause at all. Like, people need to rally behind her. But then once they mentioned that twin story where, you know, Theo's mom might have not really been the legitimate queen, like, it all made a lot more sense to me. So I'm glad we kind of got that explanation.
I am too, but I'm also curious because at the same time, it feels like she's most comfortable on her ship. Mm-hmm. Like, she's kind of out of her element a little bit in this environment right now. And part of me is like, what does she actually want? Like, I get, like, it's not like she could just become queen, like, to be a ruler now in a country that's already been, like, taken over by the enemy. Like, I'm a little bit still, part of me is like, oh, I get it. And the other part of me is like, this doesn't really fit in with what you, like, I want to see her game plan fleshed out a little bit more. I don't know. It seems like a lot of work for her to upset a life that she seems happy with, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
And then the other thing I like, though, is, as we're seeing all these different countries, because, like, we've never left Astria before, and we're seeing, like, they all have different forms of government and different forms of leadership, and I love seeing that kind of play out, too. It's such an interesting way to deal with the politics and kind of explore some of these. Like, it doesn't feel super political, but I still feel like there's a lot of interesting things happening with what one of them, an empress, comes to possibly partner with her.
Win her hand.
Yeah, one of them's like a democracy. Several of them are different forms of like monarchy.
One's a monk.
Yeah, there's one that, two with like the, it's a bunch of tribes or something with different kings, mm-hmm. but like no single king. And just, it's just interesting to see that play out too. And I love the like science and technology versus magic piece.
Oh, right. Because they land at this place called, what's it called? Crevero?
I have no idea how to pronounce it. Yeah, Sta Crevera. Yeah.
Crevera. And it's, yeah, it's pretty cool. They have lots of technology like running water and elevators and what else? Just, it's like the way they describe it, this new area, it sounds beautiful and it looks beautiful from the outside, like the way they were describing it. But then I also love how some of the people who are coming from other countries describes it as tacky and like gaudy. And it's like a very beautiful country at the surface. But mm-hmm. then we're kind of learning that underneath it, it kind of has not so nice a reputation.
Yeah, but it also, it's so interesting to me. I think it's funny in so many books that we read where there's magic, but otherwise it's kind of very old fashioned, like to the point here, running water like exists in this world but not on their country, but they like have the ability to like heat water with gemstones and stuff, so they like mm-hmm. like it's funny how magic can almost be a hindrance for development or like a crutch almost in mm-hmm. some ways. And then it's also just interesting to see, because to us like that magic would be like fascinating, but then on the flip side, if someone hasn't seen technology and science doing some of the great things that are normal to us now, like elevators and running water, and it's like, whoa, like she doesn't even want to ask questions because she doesn't want to look like an idiot, but like it's so fascinating even though she has like grown up in a country with magic. I love that dynamic too of like, I don't know, science versus mm-hmm. magic and all of that.
I agree.
But yeah, so I guess this book, even though we're still in the first half, I feel like there have been two halves to this half. Part one was like on the ship, figuring out the pirate situation. And then part two is when we got to Stock Rivaria. And now we're in like a bachelor situation.
Oh my gosh. I know. It reminded me so much of The Bachelor when she was like meeting with all the different emperors and empresses, like vying for her. And mm-hmm. she would be talking to one of them and then someone else would come in and be like, oh, I'm sorry. Can I just interrupt you for like a minute and yeah. steal her? It was so The Bachelor. I was laughing. Yeah. So yeah, I'm sorry. I'm totally going to let you have your time, but I just really quick.
I'm here for the right reasons.
And please don't drink my champagne.
It is so funny.
It's so Bachelor. I wonder if she did that, if the author like did that a little bit to kind of, as almost like an homage to The Bachelor, because it's just, it's almost too similar. I'd like to think that she kind of included it as like a little aha, ha ha ha.
Yep. We need to find out if she watches or what she thinks of the franchise. But
okay, yeah.
But yeah, it is. But I love. It still feels like I feel like you know we've read like. Not on the podcast, I guess, but we've both read, like, The Selection, and, I mean, we've read these other stories, and they're fun when you have, like, multiple romantic leads fighting for the hand of some, and, like, some of them are there for romance, some of them are there for power, all this stuff, and I feel like that's kind of playing out, but in such, it still feels really fresh. I don't know why, or I think maybe it's just because her reasons for getting married, I feel like, felt more compelling to me than sometimes these things play out in terms of, yeah, she really needs an army, and she really doesn't want to do it, and she already has, like, a separate love interest or two. I don't know, like, I feel like, I don't know, it feels, even though it feels like something I've seen before, it feels fresh this time. I don't know.
I agree. Because also, I mean, I love the fact that all of the suitors are so different. It's not just, like, a bunch of the same bachelor.
Yeah.
But, so I have two questions for you.
Okay.
Do you think that Theo is going to marry one of these suitors? And if so, who do you think it's going to be?
So I kind of think she does not end up marrying one of these suitors. But I sort of think if she does, it'll be Eric.
That was a wild card. Eric arriving late and then presenting himself as this.
And then being like, oh, yeah. I forgot, or I didn't know that I am actually, like, the only living descendant of an emperor, or whatever.
Well, he wasn't. He was, like, they found the one who was, and she, like, conveniently passed her title onto him, or something like that.
No, his mom was the last daughter.
Oh, okay.
Or at least that's how I read it. I guess I could be wrong, but I thought that she was... I thought the mom was the youngest daughter, and no one in the country knew that she had been taken, like, hostage with them.
Oh, but, gotcha.
But I guess your way might also be true, but that's how I read it.
Well, I think you're right. I think I don't think she's going to marry one of them, because I think the whole thing about, you know, Astrian's not marrying is going to come into play. I actually, since they brought that up again, I actually don't think she's going to marry anyone. I think she might keep a lover, but I don't think she'll marry anyone. If she were, though, I would either think Eric or this new Archduke Edmund, who, like, is the only one who, like, looks at her with any measure of respect. The other ones just all seem awful, but he's the only one who, like, asks interesting questions and actually listens to the answer.
Yeah, so, and I really hope we get more of him, because I'm curious about his backstory too, and I know that if he sticks around, we will.
He's on my bracket.
But I think, kind of to your point, I don't even know if I think if she married someone it would be Eric. I think that she's likely to find someone to partner with, but I don't think she'll get married. And I would agree with your two choices. I think, and this might be in the chapter that you haven't read yet, but I think there is talk about how Eric doesn't actually have much to offer.
Oh, yeah, I got there. His country is, like, useless, essentially.
Yeah, they're like, he also, like, hates them, and we trust him, but he's not gonna, like, help our numbers or have any resources to, turn the tide, so.
Oh, and I loved how she reacted when the king, King Aristo, is, like, the king of this Dacraveria place, and he's old, he's ancient, he's old as dirt, and I think it's fascinating because they talk about how the country itself is so advanced and has all this technology, but they have such barbaric old-fashioned beliefs. And I love how she reacted whenever the king said that she had to have a virginity test. And she was like, okay, I assume all the men are having one too. And he was just like, what? I don't get it. And she was just like, okay, well, I'm not doing that. I have to prove nothing to you, and that's barbaric and abusive, and I'm not doing it.
Also, how it started with questions about if she was raped or not, and her response was like, luckily I wasn't, but if I was, that wouldn't count, you know? And it's like, yeah, that's not...
Oh, yeah, because he described women...
Not that it even matters anyways, but like just...
As being sullied.
Yeah. She's like, how does that... And I love how it... I mean, it's such a good statement, but it's also, it comes from such a real place because she's grown up in such a different world too, which helps put this other, because I think even though we don't necessarily require women to have their virginity tested before marriage now, I think some of those ideas still persist in our society. And so I just love that she's able to challenge it, but it's not even like she thinks she's challenging it because she just grew up in a different environment where it's like, why would
not done.
Yeah.
So that kind of like having those two concepts live side by side as like a very advanced society that has very antiquated, old fashioned beliefs, I think, mm-hmm. It's interesting. It makes for an interesting country, at least for sure.
And I'm so curious again to see how some of these different political systems play. Like, you also had sort of that power struggle between the guy who was elected, I forget his mm-hmm. name now, and the king when they arrive. And
right.
I don't know. It is just kind of fun and funny. And add so much more to the world as a whole to see how big it is and how different it is and how... It'll be interesting to see who she ends up getting to be allies with her, whether it's through marriage or some other kind of deal. I think one of these or more of these countries are going to ultimately, hopefully, side with her. But what will she have to give up in return, or what are they going to ask for? And I don't know. I'm curious to see that play out.
I am too. And I'm also curious to see if she keeps, if she stays in the favor of this king, because she is right now, but she's going behind his back at the minute because Theo wanted to go visit the refugee camps because she heard that this country has been taking in refugees from all over who have been victims of the Calavaxian. So she's like, oh, I would like to go visit this camp. And he's like, oh no, that's not a place for a girl like you. And she was like, mm-hmm. I don't really know what that means. So she goes to visit them and they are slums, essentially, and the people are living in horrible conditions. So she's trying to help these people, and I'm curious to see how the king reacts if and when he finds out she's been visiting behind his back.
Yeah, for sure. And it's also such a good, again, because we've seen, first, you know, you're reading it and you think Theo's story is like so horrible because she's been forced to live mm-hmm. in this. And it is. I'm not saying it's not horrible. But then we meet, you know, people who've been in the mines and seen their friends killed and like yeah. been locked and all this stuff. And we're like, okay, yeah, that's really horrible. And then we see the people who got away and it's like, nope.
Still in terrible condition.
This is also really horrible. Yeah. And it's just like these poor people. But yeah, I also, another thing that I loved was when I think she was just reflecting on it, or I don't remember if it was just like her thoughts or something, a conversation with someone else. But when Theo was talking about how this king is both like treating her like a child and sexualizing her, and that mm-hmm. That was another thing that I feel like society sometimes does with people.
Oh, absolutely.
And it was just interesting to also see, even though the Kaiser had a lot of terrible qualities, like that group of people was at least consistent about, until you hit, I think it was a young age, like 15 or 16, you're considered an adult woman. But like before that, once you're an adult kind of thing, at least, mm-hmm. as opposed to like now she's like in this weird place where she's both treated like a child who can't think for herself and also being sexualized and like,
right.
you know, all this stuff. So.
Which is, yeah. So there's a lot to dislike about this king and the way he's ruling his country. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested to see how it plays out.
Well, and there's a price on her head. What if at some point he decides she's not worth it and the money is?
That's right. And the people in the camp, too, are viewed by the others as cursed, mm-hmm. which is just another indicator of, you know, what the kind of ugly things that are going on underneath this very beautiful surface of the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're hiding their ugliness by physically putting it outside of the like wall or whatever, you know, the refugee camp is like across the desert partially and stuff, but it's there. And the ugliness of how they're treating them, not the ugliness of the refugees, to be clear.
right, exactly.
And we found out that Kress married the Kaiser.
Yeah, I was going to say back at the farm, what happened to Kress? You predicted that.
Yeah, but I still feel icky about it.
Oh, it's disgusting. It's downright disgusting. So Kress married the Kaiser, and I'm not surprised.
Wait, I also love, this is kind of unrelated, but how Soren can't speak the language. And, like, even though he's around all the time, he, like, he only catches, like, every fifth word or whatever. And I just, like, think it's so funny that he's, like, this prince and he's been, he knows so much more about certain aspects of the world. But then it's, like, kind of ridiculous that he...
It's embarrassing that he doesn't know that language.
Grew up on this island and can't speak a word of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very embarrassing.
But it's also funny at the same time.
And I'm also, I don't know, I'm not pleased with Soren right now.
It, for what reason?
Well, I did not like... So when we were back on the boat mm-hmm. with Dragonsbane, we had that minute where they took a Calavaxian ship hostage. And, you know, Theo was like, oh, I'm going to go against Dragonsbane's wishes and I'm going to bring Soren aboard because maybe this will be a way for him to prove that he's loyal to us. Mm-hmm. And they had that scene where they capture this guy named Matin. He is someone who Soren knew, and they try and question him to see, you know, if he can give them information. And Matin ends up stabbing.
And killing, right?
And killing someone on Dragonsbane's crew. I think it was Pavlos was his name. And then he tries to stab Dragonsbane, and Soren protects her by killing him. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, oh, and then that was kind of the moment where Dragonsbane was like, oh, okay, we're going to assume that he's loyal because he killed one of his own to save my life. But then we learn that Soren untied Matin in the first place to give him the opportunity to strike back so that Soren could come after him and kill him.
I love it.
You like it? Oh, I was just like, why are you sacrificing someone to, like, prove your loyalty?
Yeah. I mean, it was terrible, but it was also really clever. And I like that it added another dimension to Soren. I think it's like the part of me that loves messy things in books. But I agree. Like, it didn't make me like him as a person more, but it made me like him as a character more, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. Like, ultimately, I agree. But it was just like, I don't know. I felt like he had so much to prove after he unleashed the berserkers and used them. Like, he had so much to prove to Theo. Not in terms of him being loyal, because I think she already trusted him in that regard. Mm-hmm. I think what he had to prove to her was that he was better than his father. That he wasn't another Kaiser. And when he does stuff like that, it makes me wonder, you know, if he really is going to be a different king.
Yeah, well, I think both him and Theo are struggling with, like, the Kaiser has had a huge influence on both of them as their example slash father figure. And I know he wasn't really a father figure to Theo in the traditional sense, but, I mean, that's her only, that's what she grew up with looking at to as a ruler. And even though she hated him, that's where she learned, like, politics, basically, both of them.
Right.
So it is interesting to see how that affects the way they both approach things and their understanding of each other. And I also loved when Soren he wasn't eating as a hostage. Ugh. And he was talking about how he was, like, trained in being a hostage. And I don't know. It's just, sometimes I kind of forget that Soren is a prince, though. And I'm like, oh, that makes, of course he's been trained in how, what would happen if he's a hostage. And of course he's like, can think about these political moves and how it would be one thing to get information and another thing to, like, save Dragonsbane's life in front of her crew. And, like, part of me, for how well he was doing as a military leader before, needs him to, like, see some of the strategy and have some of this experience, or else I wouldn't buy it.
The only thing that bothered me with the whole refusing to eat scenario was, to me, that was just pride and arrogance. And because he was like, oh, as long as I don't eat, that means that, you know, it's a control thing and you're on my terms. And I was like, no, that just means that you're going to get weak and eventually die.
I think it's a mental thing.
That irritated me. I was just like, eat what they give you. Like, they're already showing up every 2 seconds and beating the crap out of you. Like, stop being so proud and, like, eat because you need to save your strength if you're going to be of any help to anyone.
But I also think it makes sense from a mental standpoint. Like, odds are they're not going to let him die if they need him. And even if it's not actually giving him actual control, if he can't physically escape, then it gives him a sense of, I think it can be a sign of hopelessness to be completely at the mercy of someone else. So even though it's, like, a small and somewhat stupid thing because you're also weakening yourself,
it's like what he could control.
I like by the psychological side of, like, it gives you a sense of, like, they haven't, like, completely beaten me yet. I can still choose to eat or not. And they want me to eat and I'm not going to. But and then the other side, it's like, if you really feel that strongly about it, you gave in really easily when she was like, just do it.
I guess maybe it was like, maybe it struck me badly after I was reading about the refugees and I was just like, oh, Soren, you have the luxury of being able to refuse food. Oh, good for you. You know, like,
no, that's fair.
It, like, irritated me.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on.
I really do feel bad for Cress, though.
I do too, but I want to see her again. I mean, we've seen her in dreams and stuff, but it is fun. I like, and I do feel like this doesn't feel too much like a second book because there's enough happening and we're seeing enough of the world and we're meeting all these new characters. Mm-hmm. And it almost could be a standalone book on its own in some ways because we're seeing so little of what's happening back on the island. But part of me, like, I hope we either get there or get more of a peek into it, because it's going to be hard to just hear rumors about Cress and not, like, I want to, like, see her.
Agree. I miss her. Yeah. As much as, you know, she's kind of like a fun villain to have. And
because she's also smart.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I want to see her kind of like, I want to see how she's dealing with being the wife of the Kaiser. Because that's horrible. I mean, that, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. So I think it's kind of, it'll be interesting to see her in that role.
Especially without her dad there to protect her. Like, I feel like her dad had a lot of faults, but I think he did truly like love her and look out for her.
I agree.
And was also close to the Kaiser. And I feel like even if she had, I don't know if he would have let her marry him, but even if she had, if he had been alive, I feel like she would have been safer.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I want to see. Oh, I just want to see. I want to see if she somehow outsmarts the Kaiser and helps, or if she ends up being a victim and they save her, or if it's some combination of the two, or if it's, I don't know. I just want to see.
Me too.
But before that, I guess we have to finish this. I'm curious to see how long this Bachelor thing goes on, because part of me is like enjoying it, but especially like, I feel like some of what's fun about reading this is still the romance part. And since these aren't really true romantic candidates, I sort of want it to like, I hope it keeps moving pretty quickly and we like pick a partner or don't, or like have a fallout with the king and thing, or I hope something happens soon, because I don't want to just like go on dates with these guys all the time.
I doubt that we will. I mean, so far I would say the pacing of this book has been really great.
Yeah.
I think they keep introducing new things to keep me interested, and I'm honestly like really enjoying reading it. I don't think Laura Sebastian will let us down in that regard.
No, I would agree. And like I said, if we get some backstory from some of the more interesting ones, especially whoever ends up being our partner or ally or whatever, that would be good. And seeing how this, when the king, I think when, not if, when the king finds out that we've been to the refugee camp, how that plays out. And yeah.
Did you do any research this week?
Okay, I did a little bit. I think I Googled. Okay, so I'm sorry, I'm all over the place in explaining this. I like to give you some background because sometimes my stuff comes out of nowhere. I think you will understand where this came from. But
okay,
just to remind us, we talked about how Soren kind of proved himself when the pirates invaded this Kaloxian, or whatever you call it, trade ship. And how he was able to do that in part is because Theo tricked her guard, quote unquote, into letting her go on the ship and like kind of finding out what they usually do. So they always kill everyone on board, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was some pushback about how the slaves, or the, slaves get drowned as well when they do this and whatnot. So I looked up a little bit about what to do if you are attacked by pirates today.
Ooh.
So the other side, not how to attack people as pirates, but if you were like, should you try to stab the pirate king, or should you cooperate, or should you, you know, what should you do?
Okay.
First of all, I think a lot of what I read was actually like a few years old, but I think it's might still be true that like the Somali pirates are kind of the worst pirates of the day. So like off the Somali coast is kind of the most dangerous high risk waters that you'd generally want to avoid if you're trying not to have a pirate run in.
Okay.
Let's see. So I think in 2009, there were 102 pirate attacks and 39 hijackings in that region off the Somali coast, but that's a few years ago. I thought I had a more recent number, but 306 attacks occurred worldwide in 2009. Actually just in the first 9 months of 2009. So even though a lot of them happened in the Somali coast, pirates are all over the globe, not just in the Indian Ocean. So another problem spot is off the coast of Venezuela, although that's more of a robbery location than a hostage taking location.
Crap, that's where Aruba is.
Yeah, but the Somali pirates are more likely to seek a ransom. So usually they won't kill a hostage, but they are likely to kidnap people. So what to do if pirates attack? So the most important thing to do is to not slow down in the face of fire. Also consider evasive maneuvers, such as short cycle zigzags. Supposedly this sometimes deters pirates.
Wait, like zigzagging your ship?
Yeah, I guess. Oh. I think it also depends. I think this one was more about if you're on a small ship. So if you have like the ability to like change direction a lot, I think it can be sometimes harder. Also, swerving can amplify the wake, which can disrupt the pirate's boat and their ability to attack. At 15 knots, the ship's own wake will become a deterrent, said some guy who knows things. There's some other like defense mechanisms you can use, like something called fire pumps and a long range acoustic device, which I read about in a lot of places. I think some cruise ships have them too. It's a device that like makes a really loud noise that somehow it's like a deafening horn that can force pirates to retreat. But I also read about a lot of people, in general, the experts say you shouldn't use a gun even if they come on board or like anything like that. But a lot of people sharing their own stories were like, yeah, I have a giant gun that I like make sure they can see in their binoculars. And it's like someone turned away once or, you know, so I don't know, but probably don't use a firearm if you're not trained in using a firearm at the very least.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Some people will, well, you should always try and transmit like mayday signals or satellite messages as soon as you can if you think you have a pirate situation to the appropriate authorities, because they might be able to help you. But also erecting barricades like barbed wire and netting can prevent pirates from getting on board. And if they do get on board, they say you should not offer any resistance and cooperate them and try not to make any sudden moves around the pirates. One of the things I was reading was basically saying, think of it as they're probably it's more like a robbery. So they're not going to hurt you. But if like you walked in and someone was robbing your house and you like startled them or like threatened them, then you might get hurt in the process, kind of thing. Like they didn't come there with the intention of killing you, but like with nothing to lose, they will kind of. So they were basically like, for the most part, pirates are gonna like take what they want, and as long as you don't cause a scene or like threaten them at all, then hopefully you'll be able to get out. A lot of boats will have a safe area, so try to get as many people as you can into the safe area.
I was upset that we already researched female pirates. I forget what series it was for, but that was, I think you did research for that, and it was so much fun just learning about the different women who like ruled the high seas.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are still some women pirates.
Pirates are so fascinating, actually. And you know I love a good pirate prince, as we've discussed before. So maybe that's why I'm, like, giving Soren a pass, because he's on a pirate ship and he's a prince. So I'm like, well, you know, it's not quite exactly what... I don't know. A lot of things were actually, like, not super interesting, but I guess I knew pirates still existed, but in my mind, I still think of pirates as, like, Pirates of the Caribbean or something with, like, old school ships and, like, I don't know, like, the charm, you know, not, like, pirates today who are, like, modern...
Modern day people, yeah.
Criminals who, like, have a operation and weapons and I don't know. I just, like, in my mind, it's, like, just, like, this kind of romantic idea of this, I don't know, pirate from the olden days. But yeah, basically there's a lot of things you can do to try to keep people from boarding your boat if you can, but then once they're on there, a lot of times it just says to like cooperate as much as possible. And
what do you do to keep them from boarding? Like, is it like laying siege to a castle? Like, bring out the hot oil? No.
There's a bunch of things you can do to try and get advance warning. So there'll be like different things people will add on for like night vision and like radar detection and things to try to keep, to try and be aware. Mm-hmm. They also said ships should travel with lights blacked out except for mandatory navigation lights if they're in an area that has pirates. Mm. And that also allows them to turn on the lights and possibly like reveal how big the ship is and like be surprising at some point.
You don't want to mess with us. Yeah.
The LRADs, the long range acoustic devices, I read about in almost every article.
Oh, that's the big thing. Okay.
So I guess it sends sonic waves and it can cause eardrums to pop and bleed. So like it uses sound, but like as a weapon. Some do these hoses, you can get, like, water pressure. I think that was the fire hose thing, like...
Oh, okay.
Basically, like, try and keep them from being able to even find a spot on your boat that they can grab. So, laying out barbed wire, laying out nets, moving so it's harder to... But I think also they were kind of like, if it's a well-run pirate organization, like, you're probably going to be caught. So, some people will also hire different kinds of protection if they're, like, traveling in certain areas. People who are, like, trained and stuff. But I also read that they are... I can't find the name of the organization, but there's like this group, but they're basically trained in lethal force. So you like almost, they're like, ideally they're somewhere in the middle. Like you don't have to use lethal force to keep the pirates away. But yeah, it's a real thing. Although hopefully, like most cruise ships aren't going to take you somewhere where there's a lot of pirates.
Where that will be a danger. Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting.
Here's some questions to ask if you're trying to sort out if it's a pirate or a fisherman. I just thought funny.
I think it would be pretty obvious, wouldn't it? Right? Unless they're disguising themselves as fishermen to get close.
Where am I? Being in coastal waters and seeing a skiff is far different from being 600 miles offshore and seeing a skiff. What is the other vessel doing? Is it approaching me? Is it drifting? If it's drifting, maybe a course change will open the distance, or failing that, prove the boat wants to approach. What can you see in it or around the vessel? Are they towing things? Are there fishing buoys? What do small boats in this area normally do? This is a more difficult question if you're new to the area.
Oh my god.
I just thought, like, these questions were so funny. Like, and I can just be like, I mean, I get, like, it's true, the ocean's a big place and not every other boat out there is a pirate. But yeah, if they're, like, coming towards you... And, with guns. You know, yeah, and you're, like, off the Somali coast or the Venezuelan coast, I guess, I'd be a little bit more...
Yeah, that's pretty much all you need to figure that out.
Especially, like, if you... it, like, reminds me of, like, in Cars, you know, it's like, oh, I feel like that car's following me. So, like, just take a turn and see what happens. And if it also turns, like, then be suspicious. And if not, then you're good. Like, yeah, if something's drifting out there, like, go in a different direction and see if they also adjust course or not or whatever. Wait, have I told you about the time? This is, like, completely unrelated. But I went to... I think most of our listeners know this. I lived in Belgium for a year and a half in middle school, and we went to this British school that was really far away from our house.
Okay.
And it was like the first month we were there, and my mom got lost on the way home, but we took the same wrong turn as the car in front of us, and they ended up like living on our street or like going like really close to our house. And we felt so bad because we like took the wrong turn.
Following them.
For like a really long time, and like... Yeah, turned around at the same time and, like, all the stuff. And we, like, could see them through the front windshield, like, through their back windshield, our front windshield, like, turning. Like, I feel like we were making them really suspicious, but it was, like, my mom and three kids. So, it was just, but we were, like, cracking up because we were, like, we really don't mean to be following these people. But it was a really long time.
Those poor people. They were like, oh, my God, this mom and her three kids are coming to take me.
They're probably telling the same story. Yeah.
They're coming to take me to Target.
Anyways, so my advice is just try not to run into pirates. That's my best advice.
That's good advice. That's good advice for everyone. I have a couple things that I researched. I felt like there was so much stuff in this half to research.
There were a lot of options.
I couldn't decide. So, okay, you can decide what we talk about.
Ooh.
I first started researching funny ship names because I was upset that my prediction about the name of the ship being the name of the title, mm-hmm. I was upset that I was wrong. So to make myself feel better, I started researching just really funny names for boats or ships that people have out there.
Okay, I love that. But what are my other options?
The history of the elevator.
No, ships for sure.
Because we had that scene, though, where Theo was, like, very fascinated by this elevator. So I was like, okay. And then phoenixes. I also did a little bit of research about the symbolism behind phoenixes.
Okay, those are both good things, and I'm sure I would learn a lot. But I want funny ship names.
I don't blame you. I mean, that's what I would have gone with, too. Some of these are so punny and dad jokey. You are going to love them.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Is this going to make me want to buy a boat?
Yes. The best one, hands down, that I came across. Someone owns a boat. This is just me Googling, like, boats with funny names, by the way. The Unsinkable 2.
Oh, man. I really want to hear the story behind that.
I know, me too. There's another one called Zombies Can't Swim.
Okay, I will say, I do feel like, can coronavirus swim? It might be smart to go live on a boat right now.
Yeah, if you can. There's one that was owned by a woman who's obsessed with pugs, and so it was like a picture of this boat with like 10 pugs on it, and the boat was called Pug Boat. This one was good. There was a boat, and the name of it was just Uh-Oh, but it was written upside down. So if the boat's like capsized and sinking, that's all you'll see.
That was clever. Amazing. I love that, actually.
There's this one boat that is owned by a pharmacist, and he decided to name his boat Drug Money. Okay, and then there are a ton of really bad puns. So we have Breaking Bass with the logo from the Breaking Bad show. The Codfather. It was a picture. It was like a fish that looked like Marlon Brando.
Oh my goodness.
Vitamin C, S-E-A.
I love when people say all you need is vitamin C in their beach house and it's spelled that way. Oh, I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's very silly or funny, but I like it.
Ship happens.
Story of my life.
Seize the day. S-E-A-S. And then I actually really like this one. So it's just biatch, but the yacht is like spelled like a yacht.
Oh, I do like that one, especially for someone with a yacht.
Mm-hmm. There was one guy, his name is Gray, because his ship is just named 50 Shades of Me. And then there's just some other funny ones that are like, kid's inheritance, she got the house. Favorite mistake. So yeah.
What would you name your boat?
Bodie McBoatface. I don't know.
I feel like it would be, you know how I still haven't changed my Instagram name because I didn't understand how Instagram names worked when I first did it. Now I feel like I have to have the perfect name to change it to, and it's really stupid because my current Instagram name is just completely stupid. I feel like I would do that with a boat where I would just like not name it for the longest time because I'd want the perfect name, and then I just, for years, my boat would be unnamed.
I agree. I would do the same. And I like how you're not supposed to name boats after anything to do with the ocean or like anything nautical. You're not supposed to. It's like bad luck, I think.
Ooh, I didn't know that. Why is that?
I don't know.
Or has that always been the case?
Yeah, I think that's like a thing. Like,
you're not supposed to
name a boat after anything to do with the ocean.
I would think it would be, or not I would think. I could also see it being part of like a, while you're at sea all the time, you want a reminder of something like from home or like I think that's why it's named after women a lot, right? Because they'd like leave their, or like traditionally they were named after women. It's like, I don't know. I don't really know. I'm just saying stuff now.
That might be true.
But I can make your boat go faster if you'll name it. And then we'll just avoid the pirates and coronavirus and everything will be good.
I know. I have a friend who always wanted a boat and she always wanted to name it the Never Again, too.
My parents have a pontoon boat. They live on a lake right now. And we were like the neighbors. The way we got to know all of our neighbors is we got stranded on that pontoon boat in the tiny, tiny lake that takes like 20 minutes to go around the whole thing on our very, very, very slow pontoon. Mm-hmm. And somehow, multiple times, we ended up in this, what did they call it? I think they called it Jurassic Park. Just, it had all these like weeds and stuff and boats would get stuck there and they were just like, don't go back here. And for some reason, my family did multiple times. Like, we just were constantly being rescued by our neighbors and then we'd like talk to them on the way to the dock. And that's how we met like all of our neighbors in our old neighborhood.
Aww. That's a cute story.
They also did, at Christmas time, all the pontoons would do Christmas lights and we do a little like Christmas parade around the lake, and it's one of my favorite Christmas traditions.
Aww. Man, I wish we lived somewhere where you could be out in a boat for Christmas.
I know, right?
You might be out in a frozen lake.
I mean, I live in Arizona now, so. Sometimes I forget I live in Arizona, and I just, mm-hmm. I think, like, the Chicago winters are, like, burned into my brain or something, where I'll say things, and then someone will be like, you're in Arizona, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't have winter anymore. It still, like, haunts me.
Yeah, rub it in.
Well, hopefully next winter, travel will be normal, and you can come out and visit me.
I really hope that happens, because I really wanted to come out and visit this year, and that's clearly not going to happen.
I know. But I'll have so many more books for you to look at in the guest room by then.
I hope you have a boat that I can go on.
There's not a lot of water to take a boat on in Arizona, though.
I guess that's true.
But we can then have a reunion in Atlanta after that at my parents' pontoon and just hang out there.
Sounds good to me.
I feel like we got very sidetracked. I apologize, but those were great boat names. I like it. I feel like, so James, this is also not related. I'm just brain dumping on you today. I've been in quarantine too long. Just kidding.
I hear ya.
So James, my husband he likes cars, but he always, or not always, but he tends to come up with funny license plates for them. Although half of them I don't understand because they're car jokes or something. But we have a thing in our garage with all his old license plates. But I had one vanity plate that my family got me when I turned 16 because I drove the family minivan. And my favorite dish growing up was chicken divan. So it just said I would become the chick in divan. So
that was my
license plate. But it was just CHKDVN or something. So it was, or CHKNVDN. So it was really hard for people to figure it out. And so the number of times I'd be like in a parking lot and someone would be like, I don't get it. Or like trick and driving or like try and guess what it was so embarrassing.
That taught you.
And like vanity plates aren't really my thing, but I need to find it. It's in a box somewhere and then I can add it to our wall in the garage.
I can't believe you kept it.
I am a
hoarder.
Mild hoarder. Yes. I need to send you a picture of my podcast room because it is just full of boxes of stuff I made James take out to Arizona. And he's so good about throwing things out. And I'm like, oh, it's an old magazine from when I was 12. Like, I might still need that article. I don't know. I'm terrible.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so I am not a hoarder. But the one thing that I am bad about is getting rid of food in my freezer. And Chad always makes fun of me because he'll be going through the freezer and he'll be like, there are 10 black bananas in here. Like, what are you planning to do with these? And I would just like to say, I totally had my moment because when we were in quarantine, we have slowly worked our way through that freezer using everything I had. And I feel very validated right now.
James, we've been stated if you want to throw things away, you can't throw them in the actual trash. You have to throw them somewhere else so that when I go and look for them, I can find them. Because he's thrown away enough of my stuff that, because he just thinks, which is fair, I keep a lot of stuff I don't need. But then he will throw away like the juice that I've, or like the last egg because he didn't think we needed it. And I'm like thinking about making muffins that day or something silly like that. So, but we had sugar cookies the other day and he gave up sweets for Lent. And they weren't really ones that I especially love, but I was going to like a book club or something and I didn't have time to go to the store. So I was like, oh, I'll just bring the sugar cookies that we had that James isn't going to eat. And I came home and he had thrown them out. And I was like, why?
The weirdest thing that I did have in the freezer that I granted was a little strange was I had, for some reason, frozen like an entire half gallon of milk and all these little yogurt cups. And then these individual slices of ricotta pie that I had made like right a year ago. And I was like, okay, maybe I should draw the line at freezing old dairy products.
Yeah. There's always a line, but I think this in our books and I think this in real life. Your weaknesses are usually just your strengths taken too far, right? So like you...
Oh, I like that.
You've frozen necessary food and yes, you maybe froze a couple dairy products that should have been thrown out, but...
But my intentions were
to
good.
To your point, this week it's been good.
Yes. Okay, I like that. I'm gonna go with it. okay, should we finish the rest of this book?
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Me too.
We should probably not wait a whole week to talk again.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've been reading these halves in like a day just because there's not a whole lot else to do.
What do we think is going to happen at the end of this book though?
I think we're going to meet Cress again. I really do.
I'm trying to figure out where I think it ends because it's still a trilogy. I'm trying to think of what would make it a good like end of the second. Like, do you think we get to the... I almost think we... don't actually, like, we get everything ready, but we haven't actually, like, interacted with Cress again.
Oh, like, maybe they come face-to-face and then it ends?
Yeah.
Okay, that could happen. I think they're going to liberate the refugee camp and somehow get everyone there on their side. I'm not sure what use they will be. I don't mean that in a mean way, but, like, I don't know if how many soldiers are there.
Yeah. It is kind of an interesting problem, though, to think about a little bit, because I mean, this will probably make me sound like a terrible person. I think the conditions of the refugee camp are terrible, but part of me is also, like, you have so much going on right now with just... You almost need, like, you can't save everyone at the same time. And I do hope that they somehow improve conditions, but I almost feel like it would be more of a detriment than a good thing to, like, bring them all on one of the boats or something. So if they can, like, make things better without hurting their mission, that would be awesome. But I don't know if that's possible.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Unless they, like, but if they pair up with, like, someone and they, like, bring all, maybe they bring all the refugees to, like, Eric's country and then take just the, soldier people from there or something like that.
I wonder if it's going to be like a Hunger Games thing where they all regroup in like District 13 and District 13 is actually Eric's country and they use that as like their home base.
I feel like Eric has to be an ally even if she also needs another ally, right? I like Eric.
Yeah, Eric's an ally for sure.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be her husband, but...
I don't think she gets married. I kind of hope she doesn't get married.
No, I hope she doesn't either. That would bum me out if she did, honestly.
I almost hope throughout this whole book, I don't even know if I want her to end up, like, I almost, like, don't want it to be a, especially with all the stuff they've said about, like, I hope that she becomes queen at the end of it and never takes a true husband.
Agree. And I hope that, I really hope that not true husband is Blaze at this point. I'm, like, done with Soren. I turned on him so fast.
Wait, who was Soren your guy or was Blaine your guy? Oh, okay.
Soren was my guy. No longer.
So does that mean I should switch just to be, just so we can be on opposite sides? But here's the thing. I also kind of want Blaze to berserk.
I think he is. I think he absolutely is.
And I mean, not that I want that for him, but I feel like from a plot standpoint, I kind of hope that it happens at like the worst time or the worst way or something bad goes on and like they have to deal with it. I don't want him to die.
Do you think that means that he'll die?
I think if you berserk, you die.
Oh. Because that was unclear. Like, they always say that, like, right. If you go mind mad, it's like a death sentence. But then I thought maybe it meant that you didn't die, you just turned into, like, a berserker. But I didn't understand. I don't know the consequences of becoming a berserker.
I guess I don't know for sure, but in my mind, berserkers, like, explode and are dead when they, when they're activated. Which is, again, though, where I was, like, confused by how... But maybe that's why I'm struggling so much. Maybe that's not at all what happens, and that's why I was so confused how the king could, like, make them berserk on purpose. This is just it's fun to say.
I like using that as a verb.
Exactly. I'm gonna... How many times...
I do think he's going to berserk at some point.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I actually am curious... We haven't talked about this yet. What do you think is going on with her? Because she's, like, burning things and getting hot and...
Do you think she's a berserker?
I don't know. Or is there something else going on? Because it does kind of feel like she... I don't... To your point, didn't you say at one point you thought she was going to eventually use her firepower?
Yeah, I thought she was going to be a guardian.
Yeah, so I'd be curious to see if she finds a way to manage it and uses it, or if she somehow, like, also loses control and berserks, if you will. It's just fun to say. I have to... How many other people can I have berserk in my prediction? Kress. Kress is also going to berserk. I actually... This would be really cool. What if we find out that even though we keep thinking that the Kaiser is, like, treating her horribly, what if with her, like, new magic power and stuff, she is totally...
She kills him.
Either kills him or just, like, yeah, is in complete control.
Oh, I want her to, like, berserk all up on the Kaiser and that's how he dies. She, like, burns him to death.
Yeah.
Or maybe Kress and... Maybe Kress and Theo will come together for a dual berserking. And take down the Kaiser together, and that reunites them at the end.
Yeah. What happens if two berserkers berserk each other? Okay, double this is berserking. Too much. Too much. Okay, any other predictions?
I think that sums it up pretty well.
Just lots and lots of berserking all over the place. Cool.
Okay, do you have a joke for me? Shoot, it's my turn.
I was going to say, I don't, but I thought you did.
It's my turn. I do. Okay. I just have to find it. Okay.
I'm just laughing about berserking still, so. I don't know if I even need a joke. You had all those punny ship titles. Just kidding, I always need a joke.
Okay.
Okay. I love it when you laugh before you tell it.
Okay, the amount of bad coronavirus jokes is starting to reach worrying numbers. Some scientists claim it might be a pandemic.
But actually, it might be, because I am still enjoying them, but the number of memes and jokes out there is reaching...
The memes are golden.
Yeah. It is actually the best part about coronavirus, because there's not a lot of other good parts, so...
Agreed.
Internet content is good.
Wait, I have another one.
I am definitely going to try and use pandemic at some point this week in normal conversation, next time someone brings up some memes.
All right, I ran out of toilet paper, so I've begun using old newspapers. The times are rough.
Oh, I hope that doesn't become real. Are you still good on toilet paper?
Yes. Well, I just installed bidets on all of my toilets.
Oh, yeah?
And I did it late last year, just because I've always wanted to. And I had some people make fun of me for it, and now they're not laughing. Now they're very jealous. Highly recommend it. That's
great.
All right, if you guys want to get in touch with us, you can email us at mnktalkya@gmail.com.
You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at mnktalkya and tell us who you think is most likely to berserk and or what you would name your ship.
I'm going to name my ship the Berserker.
I like it. Wait, can that be our fan name?
Berserkers, yes. We're oh my gosh, yes.
We're berserkers about this
Berserkers. Done.
It feels like a pot. It sounds almost pot, like too good, but it's kind of a bad thing. Is this
it
like?
It sounds like a fan who has gotten out of control, which is kind of us.
Which is what we are. Yeah. Yes.
So I think it's perfect.
All right. Anything else?
That's it.
Bye, bookworms.
Go get a library card.
M&K Talk YA is produced and edited by Marissa Snyder and Katie Bradford. Original music composition by Timothy Milkey. Logo design by Marissa Snyder. For updates and extras, visit mnktalkya.com or follow us on Instagram and Facebook. And if you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. We would like to thank James Tobias, Chad Snyder, Meredith Kelfi, and Michael Howard for all of their support. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.